So, first of all, one question, just to kind of build on what we discussed yesterday. So we talked about the position of the Ritva, where it seems that Shlichus would allow for the Shliach using his own money. But the Din of Eved Kenani, which says someone else can pay off your Kesef Kedushin for you, that Rashi says, works together with Shlichus. We had a discussion whether it needs Shlichus or not, but in any case, works together with Shlichus. And the Ritva's opinion was very different. The Ritva's opinion was, no, Shlichus doesn't need Eved Kenani. That Shlichus, your emissary, your agent, can not only perform the Pu'ulas HaKedushin, but can also provide the ring. So we discussed, why should there be a difference then according to Rashi? Why does Ritva say that you can use his own ring, you don't need any Kedushin of Eved Kenani, Shlichus includes that, and apparently Rashi feels differently. And we discussed the view that maybe Rashi is more of a Chiddush than the Ritva, because as some of the Achronim point out, that the Shliach already is using a lot of his own equipment, whatever you want to call it. He is using his own feet, he's using his own hand, he's using his own mouth. So why should we say that shouldn't extend to the ring? And therefore, Rashi's position that it doesn't is maybe more of a Chiddush. And we discussed an approach to that a little bit. So just to kind of flesh it out a little bit more, and there is a discussion about this, there's an article in a journal called Hayashiv HaTov, which can also be found online, and there is an article by Rabzam Nechemi Goldberg, Shlita. It's well known as one of the preeminent Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael. And he has an article, which I should send that a link to this also, so Blue Netter, if I remember, maybe I'll send that a link so you can read it afterwards. But it's an article which really talks about other things. It talks about lulav, and about the question of why is it that we can't have shlichus for a lulav? Why is it that you need to take a lulav and an esrog yourself? And we touched upon that point a little bit yesterday. It's a topic that's discussed by the Tosfos Rid, and the Kedushin, and the Ktzos, that shlichus works maybe when you have something that's more result-oriented, but something that you do with your body, mitzvah shebegufo, it's one of the distinctions that you normally find. So working within that whole topic and other discussions, so he addresses this topic, he addresses this question, and he suggests that perhaps Rashi is drawing a line between the action itself and the monetary component. So based on that, a question which the Rishonim dealt with, really coming from a slightly different angle, comes up based on the Mishnah in Gittin on Daf Samach Vav Mura Aleph, which I added in today's list, if you had a chance to see. There are a number of Mishnayos on that daf, but it's the first Mishnah. I tried to make that clear. I think I indicated that it was the first Mishnah. So there, the Mishnah talks about somebody who is trapped in a pit. And perhaps he's worried that his fate will be unclear, and he doesn't want his wife to be in a situation of igud, not knowing what the story is, so he wants to divorce his wife while he still has the chance. So he sends out an instruction. He says, anyone who hears this should write a get for my wife. So the Rishonim already addressed the question that, okay, he can do a get with shlichus. He can appoint somebody to give a get on his behalf. But what about the paper? The paper is supposed to be his. So how do you handle that? How exactly do you address the fact that the paper is not going to come from him, it's going to come from the shliach? Now, normally, when a person, under more flexible circumstances, gives a get through a shliach, so we can deal with that in advance and ensure that the paper that's being used is from his property, that's not necessarily a problem. But a scenario like this, where he's trapped in a pit, so how do we deal with the fact that the paper is not going to be his? And doesn't that then parallel what Rashi would say here, that, okay, you can send a shliach l'kedushin, but the ring has to be yours, were it not for the chiddush of Eved Kenani? So how can you send a get when the paper is not yours? So what do you think about that? Do you see that as comparable? Do you see those as related issues? What do you think? The ring equal the get paper here? Jacob?
I think there's definitely a difference.
Okay, I'm listening.
We discussed a lot about how kedushin we need kind of value or to display seriousness or to the woman is not Matani Nafsha, it's not Shavit Pruta, so we have all these kind of requirements by Kiddushin in terms of the get, meaning the paper should be his, but the value of the paper doesn't really matter. So, like, the distinction there.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, but is that enough of a distinction? So you're saying that, okay, let's say from the significance of the chashivas, that if a man stands under the chuppah and says, hi, I'm ready to marry you now, just so you know, the ring's not even mine, I got it from the guy standing over there a minute ago, so maybe that's going to subtract something from the power of the ceremony, while at the time of the divorce, if you say, okay, by the way, the paper comes from someone else, it's not going to really affect the nature. I hear where you're coming from an emotional perspective. But the question, I think we need a more technical, halachic distinction. And you might be on the way to something, but I think we need to take it another step. That if property needs to be his, and it's not there, so how is that different than the ring? So, I think the two ways we could address it. One is just one is what Rav Zalman Nechemia says, so I'll mention that second. But the first, I guess I'm doing the opposite of Beis Hillel here, I should mention my own things first. So, all right, we'll mention Rav Zalman Nechemia's first. That essentially he suggests that the nature of the Kenyan Kesef is it's not just that it has to be his, technically. And that's what has to be given over. That's true, that it has to be his. And in that sense, it's like the get paper. But there's a reason why it has to be his that doesn't apply to the get paper. And maybe this is a little bit evocative of what Jacob was saying. But that here, in one case, we're talking about a Kenyan Kesef. And in the case of the get, we're not talking about a Kenyan Kesef. Right? So that's already a clue to a significant difference. So the nature of a Kenyan Kesef, we mentioned this far actually earlier in the year at one point, that the nature is, I give you some money, and that creates a chov, so to speak, that allows the property, whatever it is you want to transfer over to me, to be transferred. I give you something, you give me something. So if somebody else is giving it, so there's nothing lacking from my end, so then that's a problem. That's something that affects the process of Kenyan Kesef at its very nature. Now, it happens to be that that is indeed possible because Din Eved Kenani expands how Kenyan Kesef works. But without that Chiddush, I would have thought that the Kenyan Kesef can't happen without not only money that's technically associated with me going over, but money that actually comes out of my pocket, money that actually is being debited from my account and credited to your account. And when it comes to the paper for the get, that's not necessarily relevant. But rather, what you need to have is the property of the bottle. Okay, so perhaps it's possible for the shliach to be mezakeh to the bottle, to let it be the property of the bottle. The fact that it's not actually being subtracted from his bank account, that doesn't have to trouble us as much. So that's the nature of the chiluk that he lays out there. Yeah, Zedidiah.
Can you explain that one more time?
Yeah, that the fact that there's only a superficial relationship here between the two, basically. Right? That yes, it's true that the ring at the chuppah and the paper of the get both have to be the property of the husband. But it really ends there, because the fact that the ring has to be the property of the husband, that's because it's a part of a Kenyan Kesef. And a Kenyan Kesef, maybe the whole nature of a Kenyan Kesef is something is debited from me and credited to you. Gets transferred from my pocket into your pocket. And then you have to reciprocate by coming through with your end of the Kenyan. So maybe you would have thought, okay, that it's got to actually come out of my pocket. The fact that somebody else will credit it to me, will associate it with me, it doesn't help. It's got to really come from my property. And the Chiddush of Eved Kenani addresses that. But without that Eved Kenani concept, you would have thought that it's really got to come from my pocket. While the paper of the get is not a part of a Kenyan Kesef, it doesn't have that same theme to it. It just has to be the Baal's. Okay, so perhaps it's possible for the Shliach to assign it to the Baal, to be mezakeh to the Baal, and that's enough. We don't have to worry that it's not actually coming out of the bank account of the Baal, that it's not actually being subtracted from the Baal's estate. Yes, sir?
Doesn't that svara seem to indicate that Kenyan Kesef is working within Khalifin?
Well, Kenyan Khalifin might be working within Kenyan Kesef, but a lot of the Rishonim felt that there is a strong link between Kalipin and Kinyan Kesem.
Right, shouldn't this be a problem with low time adoption?
Well, no, but Mar explains that the reason with Kalipin is that it's the Pachmi Kalipuka, that a lot of Rishon felt that there is a strong connection, a lumdish-wise, between Kesef and Kalipin. So that, perhaps, is one approach. I thought you could also say a little bit differently, just maybe it's a little more Balbatish, but along the lines of what we said yesterday, just to take that a little bit further. So yesterday we emphasized that when you send somebody to go do a mission for you, so it's understood that the mission includes whatever is necessary to carry out the physical components of it. But it doesn't include the expenses. That's a whole separate track. And similarly, if I lend you money, or I borrow money from you, let's say, then I understand that that's about my borrowing funds from you, but it doesn't involve necessarily any physical work. These are two separate tracks, and one doesn't necessarily have to include or address the other. So we gave the example yesterday how that would affect Hilchos Ribbis, that if you send somebody to the supermarket to buy something for you, and then when he brings it back and you pay him back for the item, if you overpay, we discuss the question of whether that's a problem in Ribbis, and we mentioned the possibility that maybe it shouldn't be looked at as a Ribbis issue at all, because even if you're purposely overpaying, you're not overpaying because you're so grateful he laid out the money. That probably wasn't the key issue. You were grateful that he did the physical labor of going to the store and picking this item up for you. So if you want to give him extra, it's because of that. So we mentioned that just to highlight that there's two different components of this service that don't connect to each other at all. So maybe you could say that we can make a distinction within that, that normally if I send you on a mission, so the mission is about the physical effort, doesn't necessarily include the monetary component. But if there's a monetary component that is simply part of the necessity of the mission, it's just the reality is that you need to do that in order to make it happen, so then that could be included in the shlichus. So normally, shlichus l'kedushin is not about providing a ring. It's about doing the physical pu'ulas ha'kedushin. But if I'm here saying, please give a get, so he's going to need to do the whole process of the get, which is going to involve also getting the paper and writing it down. So there, that's not necessarily the monetary component. That's part of the necessity to get the physical act happening, and maybe therefore there's a distinction to be drawn. I don't know if it's such an absolute distinction. Maybe Razamin and Nehemiah's distinction is a little bit neater. And just to go back to his key words there, difference between the tashlum and the pu'ula. So that which is the action itself is one thing, that which is the payment doesn't necessarily come along with that. Hi.
Is that only because your ring is more expensive? But if we have
because it does put it into a different category. So maybe that's why I alluded to before that maybe it's not as neat a distinction as, let's say, Razan Nechemda's distinction. But it's that it's understood that that's a separate component. That the ring is the because the ring is the instrument of the kedushin. But what I need you to do is I need you to bring it over and to perform the act of the kedushin. While the get, the idea is, if I need you to give a get, it may mean that I need you to write it out and to create it, and that's going to require also your producing the paper for it. But I agree with you what you're alluding to, maybe, that the distinction is not as sharp as maybe we'd like it to be, and maybe I would understand if you prefer Rav Zalman Lechemi's distinction. Yes, sir?
Can you even make it like a little more technical than that? Meaning, the only reason that it works in the din of in the case of Gittin is because there's literally no other way, meaning your shlichus implies by definition that you're going to have to be doing these things for me, because I can't buy paper, I'm stuck in a well.
Right.
And we did Kiddushin.
Doesn't necessarily imply that. Yeah, I was wondering about that also. Again, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with how vague it is, but maybe that is true, that maybe we could say that it'll differ based on the shlichus situation.
Right.
But then you have to open up a discussion, which I don't know if we have a hachra one way or another, because we already see a difference between this and Rishonim and Rashi and the Ritva, but would there be a difference between somebody who can say to a shliach, listen, here's the ring, go find Denisha, do Mekadishur, or somebody who is in a remote location and doesn't have the possibility of doing that? I don't know. I don't know if we have a hachra on that point, because the issue already seems to be something that the Rishonim are subtly differing on, so maybe there is room to say that. Okay, so that's just one stage. Just to add another 2 or 3 points. So on Sunday, we started looking at an essay in the Journal of Sohar, which again, if I remember, I will send out links. Maybe, hopefully I remember, I'll try to send out both these links to the article about that we just mentioned from Zam Nechemia, which again is really about Lulav, but happens to be in the middle of the article. It says a lot about our sugya, so if anybody wants to read it, it has some nice background. And this much longer article about Matanas Levyonim, if you want something to talk about on Purim, Matanas Levyonim through Eben Kenani. So there, he discusses this whole idea of having somebody else pay something off for you. So one point, just that's agav in that discussion, just to address one issue about that, is the question of Pidgin HaBen. And we mentioned this in a few contexts, because it came up also in the context of Matanah Manas L'Hachzir. There's a major machlokas to Poskim, Abaz, Ramah, Nagra, and others, about can Pidgin HaBen be done through Shlichus. So here you have machlokish menakatze lakatze. There are those who say that Pidgin HaBen cannot be done by shlichus, cannot be done through anyone else. You have to do it yourself. Shvizachet has such opportunities. And the others say the opposite, that not only can it be done through someone else, but that other person doesn't even need to formally be a shliach. Because essentially it should be like pareachov, it should be like somebody else paying off your debt, and if you walk into the supermarket and find out that your tab has been covered because somebody else paid it off for you, so then it's paid. They don't have to be a formal shliach, right? You hear of chasadim like that happening, or other ways of reaching out to people. So it doesn't necessarily have to even be a formal shlichus. Somebody could do this without your knowing. So in the question of Pidgin HaBen, there is a significant machlokas achronim about this, but you have opinions on two opposite ends of the spectrum. One saying that this is a personal mitzvah nesina, it's not something that anyone else can do on your behalf. And the other extreme, that not only can it work through a shlichus, you don't even need a formal shlichus, someone could do it without you even knowing about it. And that seems to revolve around the question of, is Pidgin HaBen a payment? Is it something that you just have a debt, basically, to the Shevet HaKahuna that you have to pay off? Or is this a formal act of giving that you do? Or is it some hybrid of both? And again, we address that a little bit in the context of Matana Manasa Hatzir as well. So one of the questions that is addressed there is, well, if you want to compare it to paying off a debt, so there's a little bit of lumpness, you have to figure that out also. That, yes, it's true that if somebody else chooses to pay off your debts, then that will work, and that doesn't require a formal shlichus. But how exactly does that work? So this is something that the Imri Bina, the Kalash Rav, discusses, and a few others talk about. That idea that someone else can pay off your debt for you, does that mean that that is a piron, that that constitutes the actual act of payment? Or maybe it's simply a trade-off, that maybe it's midin mechila, that essentially somebody has a debt, he's holding a debt for you, that you owe him $100. So he wants to collect the $100 from you. But if a third party comes and says, listen, I'll give you $100 to forget about the debt, so I'll say, okay, fine, I got the $100 from you, I don't need to collect it from the first guy. So maybe third-party payments is really midin mechila, that it's not actually that it constitutes a piron on your behalf. Maybe it's simply that the creditor no longer is going to ask you for it because he has been paid off by someone else. He's been incentivized to be mochalit because he has the money from a third party. So that's just a technical distinction which could affect how these things work, and it could affect the comparison from one to the other. So this discussion is invoked in that Sohar article, which talks about the question of Gael Maisa in a few weeks, of Matanas Levyonim. If you ask somebody else to give Matanas Levyonim for you, so does that work? Amidin Eved Kenani. So there in the article, just to spoil the punchline, but you can read it if I remember to send out the link. So there, ultimately, it's a 20-page article, but ultimately in the conclusion, so he assumes that it's hard to say that if somebody else gives staka on your behalf, that you are in fulfillment of Matanas Levyonim. However, if there are certain tweaks to the picture, such as, let's say, that person owes you money, and instead of paying you the money, he'll give it to staka, Or if you gave him money before Purim, and he spent it on something else, but then he uses other money to replace that for tzedakah, or somehow it came out of your pocket in some way, so then it's likely that you are Yotze Matanos Levyonin, although the author of the article writes that he's not sure if there's a proof one way or another. But we mentioned the other day that it is widespread practice the way it's generally done, especially those of us who, whether you call it a good thing or a bad thing, don't encounter an Ian over the course of Purim, so to give out to organizations that are special, let's say if you want to give in Eretz Yisrael and you're in America, so people who give out to organizations, this is certainly done here in the Shiva and many other settings, people who give to organizations who then distribute on your behalf to Aniyim, and perhaps even giving, and generally also done like this as well, to give the money to that emissary before Purim, on the condition that it will be given out on Purim. That is widely done, and some of the Makaris that I gave out on Sunday, which we didn't discuss together, but some of the Makaris on Sunday talk about that issue, talk about that concern. Okay, any questions about what we've said so far? All right, so just mention one other point. There is an essay, I don't know how familiar you are with the Svarim of Rav Moshe Sternbach, who always has something very interesting and creative to say. So he has an essay here, it's not about Lulav or about Purim, but it's about Pesach. So this is a point which I would not say over in my own shul because it would seem too self-serving, as you'll see why in a second, but I'll just say it here. And if anybody listens to this on the recording, you should know I'm only saying it to the shir, not to the shul. But the point is, it talks about the practice of when somebody appoints the rabbi as a shliach to sell his chametz. So there's often a practice to give some money to the rabbi to do that. So it's a question what that practice is based on. Is that practice a real practice? Is that an actual minig? Does it have any halachic component to it? So Rav Sternbach, who's very creative in general, so he has a discussion about this practice, and he explains why it's done in a very creative way. So he mentions one of the more common explanations, which is not where he ends up going with it, that there is a question if you have somebody do a shlifus for you. So the question is, and this is also just worth mentioning because it illustrates a point we mentioned the other day also, that if you have somebody do a mission for you, so are you allowed to assume that he did the mission? So if you have a halachic responsibility, if you have a chiyuv, so is it enough just to appoint someone else to do it and then go to sleep and forget about it? Or if you have a responsibility to confirm that it was done? Essentially, the question is, do we have a premise that shliach ose shlichuso? Can we assume that the shliach actually did what he was told to do? Or can we not rely on that? Then you're obligated to verify that some other way. So the general policy about that issue is that for dinim derabanan, we assume shliach ose shlichuso, that we're willing to assume the shliach did his job, and for the oraisas, we're more machmir. So if that's the case, presumably, this gets into a whole other discussion, maybe I'll elaborate Pesach time, but when you sell your chametz, happens to be a big machlokus about this, but some assume that when you sell chametz, you're only selling chametz to deal with chametz derabanan. And that's also because you do bittul chametz, that's how some explain that really mechiras chametz wouldn't be used for chametz d'oraisa, it's only used for chametz d'rabanan. That's a big discussion. The pashtus is, I think, that you're actually dealing with chametz d'oraisa, at least theoretically, and therefore you need a system that works on a level min haTorah. So if that's the case, so then you need to make sure the shlichus actually happened. So is that a problem? That if you give someone the shlichus to sell the chametz, so what do you do about shliach ose shlichuso? So there are some poskim who distinguish, I think we addressed yesterday, different models of what shlichus is and how shlichus can take on different forms, different levels of connection to the initial mishaleach. So if somebody is paid to do the shlichus, that ratchets things up. Then the person is called really a poel, he's really the worker of the mishaleach. And then that makes it a more confirmed deal. Essentially, you ask somebody to do you a favor, so who knows if he'll do it or not. You pay someone to do a job, then you have the right to assume that it actually happened. So some explain that's the more common explanation of why there is perhaps a practice to give the rabbi something to do this, because for Chametz Daraisa we want to make sure that there actually is a shlichus. So Rav Sternbach has a fascinating other approach to this, and he says he thinks that another reason is that after Pesach, the rabbi buys the chametz back. Right? The rabbi acquires the chametz back. And it's crucial, as he explains, that that happens, because if it doesn't happen, first of all, then you're not allowed to eat it afterwards, because it's still the property of the purchaser. But also, it casts a doubt on the whole thing, that if you're not bothering to get the chametz back, and especially if you do eat it, so then it casts a question on what was happening during Pesach. Apparently, you never really thought it was sold in the first place if you don't feel you have to actually formally reacquire it in order to be eating it after Pesach. So it is pretty crucial that the chametz be reacquired in a formal way. So the rabbi does that with various methods, but let's say with a kinyan kesef. So if he's doing a kinyan kesef on behalf of his balabatan, so where's the kesef coming from? It's coming from his own pocket? Maybe that's not sufficient in order to act on behalf of his balabatan. Maybe he needs some kesef from them also in order for it to count, in order for this kinyan kesef to work on behalf of the balabatan. So in order to make sure that happens, he has to have some of their kesef, so that that's mixed in with the kesef that he uses as the kinyan kesef to reacquire. It's a fascinating approach. So in the context of explaining that, so he goes on to say that the din of Eved Kanani in our sugya, and he has a little bit of an analysis of this. It's a rather brief piece if you want to read it inside. This sefer is more widely available than the other two I mentioned, so if you want to look it up, it's Chelek Gimel Siman Reish Ayin Hey. So he has a whole discussion as how to understand Eved Kanani. You get a briefer discussion than the other discussions. And he talks there about the fact that the Rambam, as we mentioned the other day, the Rambam doesn't bring Eved Kanani into Hilchus Mechira. He only brings it in the context of Hilchus Ishus. And that's the problem, that if it was a part of Hilchus Mechira, if it was a part of Mamon, that whole issue, that when our sugya continues with the words V'chein L'inyan Mamona, that all of this applies to Mamonis as well. So we discussed that the Rambam only really brings Ariv, as opposed to Rashi, that applies it to Ariv and Eved Kanani and other Rishonim who include Arim Chashid as well. So the Rambam only has it for Ariv, and that's where we have a problem, that you're not able to use it with Mechira, with Mamonis issues. So because Eved Kanani doesn't work, that's why we have this problem, that's why we need this Chumrah, because otherwise the rabbi could just use his own money as a Kinyan Kesef on behalf of the people, and that would allow this issue, but because we can't, that's why he has to get paid. Again, I'm not endorsing this far necessarily with any self-interest, but it is a very interesting creative approach. So in this context, he also says a little bit more about the Kedushin angle, and this is also why it's a relevant reading, is that it would seem also that in the context of the Kedushin, right, so he has, let's read you this paragraph, so he's talking about the Rambam, says, Nir v'das Rambam, shep Kedushin sarach v'chiyikach, right, normally the din of Kedushin is that the husband's got to be doing the kicha. He has to be performing the act of Kedusha. So if that's the case, so how exactly is this going to work that somebody else is doing the giving? Right, we need the husband's act of Kicha in order for this to work. The Al-Karach Mefarish, he's here coming to explain that the Rambam, when he describes the process of Eved Kanani, the Rambam adds in words that shouldn't be necessary. If you remember the language of the Rambam, when you saw it, he says, Amar la harei ak mekudeshes li bahana zu haba lach bigwali. You are now mekudeshes through this hana that's coming through my involvement, through my instruction. So why do you have to invoke this hana? What happened to just Eved Kanani working on its own? So here he's explaining that because there is the din of ki'ikach, so the ki'ikach requires that the Hana will also be a focus of what's happening here. So that's enough to qualify as the action of the husband. And we learn from Eved Kenani that even though the Hano itself comes from something somebody else gave, it's still enough that he gives this instruction and says it came about because of me. He's the one who caused it to happen, so therefore he can take credit for the Hana. So then he just adds a point again to connect this to earlier sugyas, that we see here that we discussed the sugya of Amira a little while ago. It's the question of just how crucial is the process of the is the role of Amira in Kiddushin. So according to this formulation, he goes on to discuss this, that the Amira is a pretty big deal. The Amira really is part of the, maybe the driving force of the Kiddushin. Because we could question, normally you have a ring and you have a Harayat, so which is the main part? Which is the accompanying part? But here it seems that the ring can come completely from somebody else, and that it's really the Amira that constitutes the act of kicha, essentially, here, and that's also something which is relevant to understanding other sugyas. So just to quickly review what we spoke about today, so we talked about the question of why exactly does Rashi hold that you can't use your own, the shliach can't use his own ring, a topic we talked about a little bit yesterday, and how does that stem with the fact that the Mishnah and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin is somebody who's trapped in a pit, can ask somebody else to give a get on his behalf, even though necessarily the paper will be from that person rather than from the Baal, which it ordinarily has to be. So how would you explain that? So we discussed Rav Shlomo Zalman's distinction that, yes, normally the Shliach can take on all the parts, but the Tashlum is not included in that, and that could connect to the idea of the Kinyan Kesef specifically is built on the notion that the Kona is giving up something from his pocket in order to trigger the reciprocal obligation. And we suggested also a distinction along the lines of what the mission normally is, that a mission for Kiddushin doesn't necessarily include the Shliach spending his own money on the ring, but a mission to write a get is going to require all those components, and therefore maybe necessarily that has to be included in the Shlichus. So we talked a little bit about Pidgin Aben and Eved Kenani and the nature of what is happening with Pidgin Aben, the fact that it's a machlokus, whether on the one hand, shlichus shouldn't work at all, according to some, but on the other hand, not only does shlichus work, you don't even need a formal shlichus because you can pay off somebody's debt without any authorization to do so at all. And we discussed the question of what happens there. Is that paying off someone else's debt, is that actually a piron? Is that more because of mechila? Because once the person's received money from the third party, he doesn't feel a need to collect from the original debtor. And then we discussed also how that applies to Matanos Levionim and talked about the different scenarios there, how if he pays it out of his own pocket, it's very unlikely to work, but if there's some way in which the money really is debiting from the account of the other party, then it probably should work. And then we talked about this chiddush that Rav Sternberg has about why is the minhag to give the rabbi money during Mechiras Chametz. So the more common approach, which is also relevant to understanding Shlichus, that in order to fulfill the concern of Shliach Oso Shichuso by a derais of Chametz, you want to make sure that he's a poel rather than a Shliach doing a favor. And his more creative approach, that when the Chametz is reacquired after Pesach, and that happens through Kinyan Kesef, that kesef has to include money of the Balabatim also, because otherwise it's happening midin Eved Kenani, and Eved Kenani doesn't work according to the Rambam by Mechir, it only works by Kiddushin, and that's going to be a problem, and how we also discuss this in the context of Kiddushin, how apparently the Hana that the Rambam describes, that's where we get the Kiyikach part, that the husband is doing it himself, and we see here that the Amira apparently plays a very central role in the process of Kiddushin, because in a situation like this, it's really only the Amira that's coming from the Baal, and nothing really else. Okay, so again, maybe some loose ends on these sugyas tomorrow, and we will then next week jump into the whole new subject matter.